Written by Paratactician, read by Code Switch. Chapter 3, Viral Strike. Teresi Poropi wasn't exactly surprised when she went insane. It was a ground-level tenet of troll biology that the higher your blood cast, the greater your risk of serious mental instability. The upper castes were riddled with psychosis, paranoid schizophrenia, delusion, erotomania, lack of impulse control, and, in some cases, abject lunacy, a fact which was key to any understanding of troll culture as a whole. Teresi, as a teal blood, too low to be high, too high to be normal, had always hoped she would sneak in under this particular radar, but she was sensible enough to greet the first symptoms of incipient mental collapse with regret and resignation, rather than horror or denial. She'd been far away from Alternia when it happened. As the Mekbuda campaign dragged to its bloody close, her squad had been deployed into the ash hills north of the planetary capital to hunt down the last few loose bands of Rothi insurgents. They'd dropped a little after noon, 9 killers in chameleon suits and day-vision optics, with long-barrel gisels and blades for close work. They'd been briefed to expect anything from peasants with hatchets to full-scale artillery bombardment. No one in command knew precisely how much stuff the northern tribes had squirreled away. Unfortunately, the Rothi had outsourced. Realizing Alternia's iron hand brushed off cluster bombs and mortar shells like gnats, they'd started buying in tech from the neighboring system, and the neighboring system didn't fuck around. They'd split the virus into beads to reduce its profile and hung it all along the data artery Teresi's squad used for uplink to Battalion Corps. A sophisticated scan would have lit them up like bright season's eve, but Teresi's helmsman was working with a greasy battlefield rig 10 sweeps out of date while lying on his face in a ditch. The second he'd buzzed in, he'd joined the dots, and a particularly nasty species of scrambler worm had slithered straight down the pipe and through his occipital jack. He'd made a noise at Teresi's elbow, and she'd turned just in time to see a pressurized jet of mustard blood squirt through each lens of his optics with a tinny little crunch. Then his skull had burst. By the time the screaming started from the rest of the squad, her hand was already moving to tear off the headset. "Good old Poropi," they teased her in basic. "She always gets there first." Viral strike drill was to trip your baffles and go dark, ride it out, but that was when you had a warning. She'd felt the first shriek of an impossible diamond pain in her ears, two cold thorns of toxic black glass burrowing blindly inwards, before she'd ripped the whole assembly clear and flung it away. Then her psionic had made a wet howling noise, like an animal cut open, and, on panicked instinct, she'd rolled over towards the sound and opened her eyes. The last thing she ever saw was the summer sky. Sometime later, she woke to darkness. Her eyes hurt, a lot. She reached up to touch them, and her fingers came away wet and sticky. She was lying on her back. There was a dead weight across her legs, which she managed to push clear. It was still very slightly warm. Not really thinking about very much, she staggered to her feet and pawed at the air in front of her. A little voice in her head said, "Get down, dumbass." "What?" she said out loud. "Get down!" Training reasserted itself. She dropped, reflexively, and heard a flat crack and a whine. She pressed her face into the gritty ash. "Jesus," said the voice, "that what they teach you at commando school? How to catch sniper rounds in your mouth?" "Leave me alone," she thought grumpily. "I'm not having a good day. My squad's all dead, and I think I may be blind." "No shit, you're blind," said the voice. Teresi always knew that your head voice was often very different to the way you actually sounded, which was why hearing yourself on tape was always so weird. But even allowing for that disconnect, she was pretty sure her head voice wasn't normally male. "You're gonna need to do something about those assholes," it said. "What do you suggest?" she thought, trying to convey the sarcasm without actually vocalizing, because her mouth was still full of ash. Apparently this didn't work, because the voice said, "Grab a rifle. There's one just to your right." Cautiously, she spider-walked her fingers outwards to the right until they bumped into cool metal. She scrabbled around until she had a solid grip on the barrel, then dragged it towards her. "Nice. Now crawl forward some." She hesitated. It's cool, the voice reassured her. You're in a ditch. They can't hit you unless you do something really fucking dumb, like standing up and waving your arms around. Shut up, she thought furiously, and crawled forwards. Within a couple of feet, the ground under her hands started to slope upwards. Keep going. Little more. Okay, stop, said the voice. The edge of the ditch is about eye level. She shrank down a little. Relax, these dudes suck. You spent 10 seconds doing improv mime theater just now, and they missed by like 6 feet. Get the rifle in position. It's not a rifle, she thought muzzily. It's a Giselle. Oh, shit, said the voice. You're right, that is the most important thing right now. Get that fucking thing on your shoulder or we're gonna lose them. Also, who names a gun after jizz? That is incredibly unthreatening. Don't worry, Sergeant, I'll get him with my spunk blaster. Hold on, this turned into gay porn again, didn't it? Little of this made sense, but the word we was strangely comforting. She snugged the Giselle stock against her shoulder and went to sight down the barrel on automatic, then sighed. Mystery voice, she thought. I don't know what you're talking about, but this is silly. I can't snipe blind. You're blind, the mystery voice shot back. I'm having a fucking sea party up here, let me tell you. Just peeping shit off like crazy. To your left. 10 degrees. Okay, 5 more. Now drop the barrel 1/2 inch. Yeah, do it. It was at this point that Thérèse realized what had happened. She had gone insane. The stress of the mission, the trauma of seeing her squad's brains burnt out by viral fire, and the loss of her own sight had all dogpiled her fragile teal-blood sanity and snapped it clean in half. It wasn't even PTSD. She'd just gone nuts. She'd made up an imaginary friend with a nice, warm, drawly voice to keep her company, and she was lying blind in a ditch full of corpses, pointing her gun at a cactus. Any minute now, some kindly Rothi would come along with a meat cleaver, find the crazy blind girl mumbling to herself, and put her out of her misery. In fact, she really should take the initiative. They tortured captives. But she might as well take the cactus with her. She pulled the trigger. The Giselle coughed. Bam, said the voice. Headshot. Score 1 for Thérèse Paropi Bukkake Hunter. Now way back to your right. Further, further, stop. Shit, he's moving. Hold on. Left again. Stop. There, quick. She breathed in, breathed out, pulled the trigger. Fuck yes, said the voice. Job done. Okay, you can do Tai Chi now or whatever you like. You're clear. Looks like they only sent 2 guys to mop up. I think I might just sort of stay here, actually, she thought, and passed out. She came half awake in a med cocoon, smelling clean metal and chemicals, and floated drowsily for a few seconds. There was no voice in her head, no voice at all, but a couple of people nearby, deep in some quiet discussion. Both straight between the eyes, perfect, one of them was saying. But she must have already been. She drifted off to sleep again. When she woke up properly, there were lots of tests, all of which proved that, no, she really couldn't see anything at all. She could have told them as much, but the military liked to do things properly. And a debriefing at which she received the gratifying news that she was not going to be court-martialed and shot for dereliction of duty. The general sounded a little disappointed. Then she was allowed back to the ward to get some more sleep. She missed the ladder twice and banged her shin painfully on the rim of the cocoon, but eventually she managed to snuggle down wearily into the warm sopor. It was strange not to close her eyes. Jesus, said the voice in her head. You sleep in jizz, too. That's commitment. Voice, she thought, outraged. I'm not dressed. Then she realized how stupid this sounded and blushed. It's cool, the voice said hastily. I can't see anything. You said you were having a sea party earlier, she thought suspiciously. She actually heard it sigh. Having someone sigh inside your head was really weird. It's kind of complicated, it said. It's like, I can see where things are, but not what they are. Or, no, that's not right either. I've got some limitations, okay? I'm not going to check out your tits while you're asleep, I swear. Then it added awkwardly. I mean, I'm sure they're great and everything, but... Not really, she thought sadly. They're sort of underwhelming. No, come on, girl, give yourself some credit, okay? I bet they're... Yeah, this went weird. I'm just gonna shut up now. Teresi snorted and accidentally inhaled a mouthful of sopor. When she'd finished spitting it out, she thought, "Voice, do you have a name?" There was a long silence. "Nah," the voice said. "Not anymore. I lost it." "That is very sad. How did you lose your name?" "Bet it on a pool game," the voice said. "Will you still be here in the evening?" "No promises. I'm a busy guy, you know. Got places to go, blind girls to confuse." She tutted. "Such a cool kid." "You know it, baby. I'm so cool you're gonna have an ice cream headache pretty much 24/7. I'm warning you now." There was another silence. Teresi rolled over a little. "Voice," she thought, "you're in my head, right?"
"Yep."
"So when I feel things, do you feel them too?" Was it her imagination, or did the voice suddenly sound uncomfortable?
"Kind of, yeah. I mean, there's a neural gradient, so I'm not getting the full home cinema experience with Dolby 2.0. I just get, like, echoes. But if you stick your arm in a fire, yeah, I'm gonna get burnt."
She reached a hand down under the sopor. "Can you feel that?"
"Holy shit!" the voice squawked.
Teresi grinned broadly and went to sleep. The military didn't want her anymore. They tried to be nice about it, but there was no place on the front lines for a blind soldier, and her training made her wholly unsuited for anywhere but. They gave her an extremely small pension and an extremely smaller medal, both of which she kept for sentimental reasons. The first thing she did when she got off the shuttle, edgy and awkward in fatigues, was withdraw all her savings. Then she caught a cab to a body mod clinic, one of the lower-profile cabins huddling in the shadow of Felt Mansion. She'd done her research, talked to friends in medical. The place was clean, cheap, and did good work, which was all she wanted. She didn't need to be photographed coming down the steps afterwards, ostentatiously failing to hide her new horns. The clinic tried to sell her a wide range of modifications. She turned them all down. In the end, they threw up their white-gloved hands and gave her what she wanted. Thin lenses of pyrolytic carbon brushed to a mirror finish, sealing away her ruined eyes from the world for good. Shades could fall off or be ripped away, and Teresi was determined that since she could never see how bad her eyes looked, no one else would either. They said she could have the lenses any color she wanted. Teresi asked for a minute to think about it. "What's your favorite color?" she thought. "Red," the answer came back instantly. She had to turn her face to the wall so the nurse wouldn't see her smile. "Mine too," she thought gleefully. "What are the odds?"
"Well, I'm a voice in your head, so pretty fucking high," the voice in her head reminded her.
That took the wind out of her sails somewhat, she had to admit. But she asked the nurse for the reddest red they had. The nurse said this was an unusual choice. "Most of our clients prefer something that will blend a little more harmoniously with the natural tones of the face," she objected feebly.
"Not me," declared Teresi, bouncing slightly in her seat. "I am not a very harmonious person."
"Ask him for a lollipop for being a good girl," the voice advised.
"Shh."
After the operation, she hired a skep cocoon and lay in it for 2 days straight while the bruises faded. Then she bought a new set of clothes and went looking for work. Teresi felt she had a good CV. She was, first and foremost, a highly trained killer, a skill set which, on Alternia, was never out of fashion and always in demand. Yet she had something to offer the discerning employer which was rather more tantalizing than mere aptitude with a garrote or a giselle. The Legislacerature was not like any other army division. It prioritized individual opportunities for growth over team-based assessment objectives. All legislacerators received extensive, holistic, and notoriously brutal conditioning in espionage, infiltration, psy-ops, black propaganda, martial arts, wilderness survival, interrogation, torture, psychodynamics, and simple murder. The jingle ran that one legislacerator could kill a city, and three could kill a planet. Teresi had killed a city once, and it hadn't really been much fun. She tried not to think about it too much these days. Cities died loudly, and it took a long time. Offset against this juicy recruiting morsel was the new fact of her blindness. This, she discovered, made people less inclined to take her seriously.
But she killed the first few of them, and after that, people gradually began to take her seriously again. It was during this first, admittedly rocky phase of her job search that she made a useful discovery. Her favorite weapon, since basic and before, had always been the sword. She was proficient with guns and knives and staves and bombs, but she was an artist with her sword. Being blind undeniably put a dent in this. The dent, however, was almost entirely covered up when she learned that the voice in her head was a swordsman himself. He was ever so helpful. He gave her almost everything her eyes couldn't. Positions, vectors, heights, angles. They developed a good working shorthand so that he could sketch a picture of a room in only a couple of sentences, and she could proceed accordingly. There was no lag, either. He thought, and she acted. It made the life of a blind sword fighter, if not exactly easy, then infinitely less painful and embarrassing than it could have been. Longer, too. Somewhere in the first exhilarating week of negotiations, a week of smashed glass and choking noises and arcs of bright blood on grimy backroom walls, he began to call her TZ, a name she'd never had before in all her life, and she began to call him Cool Kid. They weren't sure how it happened, they just sort of fell into it. By her 12th wriggling day, Terezi enjoyed a unique reputation among the more discerning sectors of the Alternian underworld. If you wanted something stolen, or someone killed, or somewhere blown up, you had all sorts of options available. But if you wanted something planned, there was really only one place to go. Terezi Peropi was a strategist. She took the impossible, and broke it down methodically into several difficult things, and then broke those down into a large number of things that were actually starting to look quite straightforward from a certain angle. What you did was, you went to her and said, in an appropriately respectful tone of voice, "Ms. Peropi, I want a certain event to transpire. It has to take place within the next 2 weeks, and no one can know it was my idea." Then you gave her a great deal of money. Then Miss Peropi would stroke her pointy chin and pace around the room for a while, and sometimes, if your proposition was an especially difficult one, her lips would move silently, as though she were carrying out a conversation no one else could hear. Eventually she would turn to you and say, "Okay, we are making this happen." Then she would give you a series of detailed instructions, and if you followed them to the letter, you would get what you wanted. It was uncanny. Somehow she saw things no one else could. So great was her reputation that she began to attract business from some surprisingly high tiers of Alternian society. Terezi didn't mind. Shifty-looking Imperial officers were as welcome in her garishly colored 20th-floor hive suite as low-city crime lords, and indeed there were awkward moments in which a member of the former group on her way out would encounter a member of the latter group on his way in, and a great deal of coughing and turning up collars would ensue. Terezi always seemed to find these moments particularly amusing. But even she was a little taken aback at the letter she received 3 weeks after her 12th wriggling day. It was hand-delivered early one morning, instead of coming with the rest of the mail, and she had to break a wax seal to open the envelope. The letter itself was written on thick, stiff notepaper, with a slightly coarse feel, and folded over twice. She sniffed it tentatively. A faint chemical tang, and something that might have been perfume. "Are you there, Cool Kid?" she thought. "I'm at the White Castle," said the voice in her head, which did this sometimes. "I don't see you here, dog. Tiny-ass hamburgers, tiny-ass cheeseburgers, tiny-ass chicken sandwiches. It's outlandish, kid." "Shut up," she thought fondly, "and look at this for me." "Okay, what we got here?" the voice said. "Expensive paper, purple ink, fancy handwriting, like real calligraphy stuff. Did you just open it?" "Yes, just now." "Good, because it's going to turn into dust in like 3 minutes. Enzymes or some shit, apparently. Science. Dear Ms. Peropi, I am writing to you regarding a matter of considerable delicacy, blah blah blah." The voice tailed off. "Well?" she demanded. "Fuck," it said. The next day she packed a couple of bags and caught a plane. She told the cab driver at the airport to take her to a well-known local beauty spot, then got out and hiked the rest of the way. It took 2 hours. She spent most of the walk enjoying the smell of the pine woods and the warm breeze that filtered in off the sea, and running possible scenarios in her head. Several of them ended with a body count that she judged unacceptable, either because the number was very large or because one of the bodies was hers. Eventually, she reached her destination. A pair of electronic gates whined open to admit her, then another. Then she crunched up a long gravel drive and hopped up a short flight of steps, and an unctuous valet with cut-glass consonants welcomed her to Villa Ampora and offered to take her bag. She shot a friendly grin in his general direction and said she was fine. He ushered her across what was presumably a hall. Her boots clattered on tiles and echoed off a high ceiling, and into a room. "Cool kid," she thought. "Five," the voice said. "No procs, no guns. Big dude with a fucking awful mullet, standing. Tall chick in a badass coat, standing. Skinny, kind of pirate-looking chick with some tech on her face, sitting. Tall scrawny dude looks like a skeleton, drank too much coffee, sitting. Snooty douche in a scarf, standing. All posed around the walls like they're some kind of experimental art rock outfit from Seattle getting their first big interview. Cut the tension with a fucking broadsword. Maybe tell a joke." "Good evening," chirped Terezi, and dropped her bag on the carpet with a thump. "Good evening," replied a cool female voice, and one of the guys managed an awkward, "Hey." No one else spoke. A door clicked, and there was some general stirring and rustling. "Whoa, shit," said the voice. "Hot chick, 12 o'clock, like, goddamn." "Cool kid," she scolded. "Keep it in my pants." "Hello, everyone," sang a new voice. Female, melodious, alarmingly cheerful. Sea-dweller vowels. "Thank you all so much for coming. My name's Feferi Pixies, and I want to be the next Empress of Alternia."